Welcome to the Davey Tree Expert Company's podcast, Talking Trees. I'm your host, Doug Oster. Each week, our expert arborists share advice on seasonal tree care, how to make your trees thrive, arborists' favorite trees, and much, much more. Tune in every Thursday to learn more, because here at the Talking Trees podcast, we know trees are the answer. I'm joined this week by Aaron Hoot. He's a sales arborist in Dallas for the Davey Tree Expert Company. And Aaron, welcome to the show. You came up with a great topic. I'm interested in talking about this, how preventative health care for your trees can save them. So again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So when you're thinking preventative, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
Man, honestly, recently, planting correctly. I've run into a lot of situations where we've had customers where the tree wasn't planted correctly in the first place, and it's 10 years down the road, and now it has a problem we can't fix, like girdling roots that are grown into each other or other issues that have come from the stresses of being planted too deep or planted with certain types of trees grown in different ways. And it's an unfortunate situation because, like I said, you can't do much about them when those kind of situations. Some stuff you can treat, but you can't really fix a root-bound root system if it's too grown in.
In that case, when you have a 10-year-old tree that wasn't planted, right, is it basically just need to be removed? Is that in most cases?
No, I mean, you can there's options to a certain extent. I mean, you can do root excavation with an air spading tool to observe the root flare and the root ball. And there are some roots that you can cut that maybe are pressuring a larger root, but haven't necessarily grown into it where you wouldn't be able to cut that root without damaging the one that it's strangling. There's some options. It just really depends on how far gone it is. And it's also a situation where your weather can affect how bad it is, because a girdled root system will not be able to take up water as well as a tree with the correct root system. So if you live in like down by me where we have very harsh summers, the trees need more water during the summer, but they may not be able to take it up. A tree with a girdled root system in an area where it's not necessarily as starved for water will survive a bit longer. And occasionally it actually works out. Some trees can handle it and they just stay small. Whereas some trees, you'll have a section connected to the girdled root die and it started a whole host of problems.
So I guess we should talk a little bit about proper planting. We talk a lot about it here on the podcast, but it's a great reminder. You know, the root flare, and this is what I've learned from interviewing arborists, keep that root flare above grade and you'll be okay. What are some other tips, though, for proper planting?
One of the biggest ones is type of plant selection. I try not to go too in deep on this, but I'm not really a big fan of ball and burlap trees. I'm a bigger proponent for sure for container grown. But that also, when you use container grown trees, you need to make sure when you pull it out of the container that you cut the sides of the root ball so that roots that have begun to circle will not continue to circle. Also planting small trees. So many people want to start with something. I didn't have a tree, now I've got a tree, but it's a lot harder to start out with a tree that's already larger, especially because a lot of times you do have to go to ball and burlap. And there's a lot more roots possibly already bound in a larger tree. So 30-gallon, 15-gallon tree is going to have a lot better root system for spreading than one that's 45, 60 gallon that maybe has been in a container or too long or has been cut out of the ground like a ball and burlap.
And it's going to save you a little bit of money too.
Yeah. Yeah. Patience goes a long way. It's interesting because you could plant, say, a 15 gallon tree and a 45 gallon tree. And the 15 gallon tree has such less needs as far as water and food goes that it may actually surpass the 45 gallon by establishing quicker.
Oh, that's great information. So when you're thinking preventative, what's next on the list?
A big thing is really not to wait until you see something to have someone look around. Distress signals and stress signals are often signs that damage has already been done, not that something is beginning. You know, when you have a lot of the main things you run into are fungal issues and insect issues. So wood borer damage, you won't notice necessarily until the branch has already died that you may have a problem with that. But if you have an arborist come out, they're more trained to see the pinholes, the bore exit holes in the bark. Perhaps the bark is actually cleaving off or coming off the branch in a spot you might not notice, or just knowing, hey, something stressful just happened. You're redoing your driveway. You've got construction on your house. This tree is getting stressed, and stressed trees attract wood borers. So preventatively treating, hey, this year we need to do an trunk injection to prevent wood borers, because what's happening is stressing your tree out, and you'd rather be ahead of the ball on keeping the borers at bay than trying to fix any damaged tissue, because that's really a tough thing to do. And then possibly just treating because of the species. I mean, I'm sure you've talked about emerald ash borer quite a bit, and it's made its way down to us. And the emerald ash borer beetle is not discerning about stressed trees. It just wants ash. We have a urban forest down here. I believe it's the largest in the country. It's the Trinity Forest. It's 40% ash trees. So as soon as that beetle finds it, it's going to be everywhere. And as much as we try to push it, we don't have a whole lot of customers preventatively treating.
I always like to talk about this when something like that hits an arborist area. Obviously, you've seen this coming. What are you doing? Well, how are you feeling about this? I mean, it already came through here and it's devastating. You know, we barely have any ashes left. Is that what's going to happen there, you think?
It really depends. There is a proven treatment for deterring it. Trunk injections with the correct product on a 1 or 2 year rotation has been proven to keep the damage from occurring and keep the insect at bay. So, and that is a true preventative case, just knowing this is coming. It is here. I want my tree to be one that survives and being willing to pay for preventative treatments. Trying to source your firewood locally helps a lot. That's how it got down here, as a bunch of trees got shipped from where it already was and the beetles were pupating inside of them.
And when you're in the field, do people know about the emerald ash borer? Are they worried about the emerald ash borer, or are they surprised when you tell them, hey, this thing's coming, or here, if you want to save this ash tree, you're going to have to do something about it?
It's a sliding scale. A lot less already aware of it than I expected, because we've had news releases. I mean, there was a front page on a morning newspaper on a Sunday one day, and they mentioned it. And I expected a flurry on Monday of calls about it, and didn't get as many. I really didn't get what I thought I would. And some people have a hard time hearing about something that they can't see any evidence of, because their tree's fine and the trees down the street are fine. That it's harder for them to say, okay, well, I'll pay the $300 or $400 for the injection every year, every 2 years to get it done. It's also been somewhat, we had a lot of ash trees down here get impacted by the winter storm in 2021. A lot of them just really did not do well at all. A lot of tip death, trees that some of them had to be removed. Some have been heavily pollarded in an attempt to save them, and mixed results. But that's a perfect example. That's an adverse situation that really does attract beetles in general. And so there we had to discern, is this ash borer or is this normal borer or normal wood borers? And in either sense, recommend treating, because there's borer present. But I don't know. I've been surprised. It's not as been as big of a response and an effort to pre-treat as I've expected.
So this is interesting, because we are dealing with spotted lanternfly at its peak. And compared to the emerald ash borer, as far as damage is concerned, it's not a big deal. But this spotted lanternfly is getting so much attention because you can see them. Just as you pointed out there, you can see them. They're everywhere. They're just a nuisance. But when you think of the devastation an emerald ash borer does, that should be, like you said, the front page story maybe a few times, you know, to tell people, like, hey, you can't see it, but you're not going to have ash trees anymore.
Yeah. I think a lot of it down here too is people in the South, or at least Texas area, are not used to having these kinds of problems. They haven't been through Dutch elm. They haven't been through ash borer as well. So they're not quite as educated towards the need as some people. They haven't been through, you know, the more you experience something, the more ready you are to expect it and look ahead towards it. I mean, a lot of it down here is just oaks. native oaks, and they do great. I mean, aside from a few issues that came to surmise, there's nothing that's really been a true red alarm situation where it's wiped them all out. I mean, we have oak wilt, and it's worse in some areas than others. And that is in the areas it's been bad. It's very well known and very well responded to, and people take precaution. And in other areas, even just a couple hours away in a different metroplex, it's not that worried about. And another good example of one that could be pre-treated for.
So when I'm thinking preventative, I'm thinking about having my Davy arborist come, which they come in my situation twice a year, just because I am in this declining oak forest, which I talk about almost every episode. Talk a little bit about that, about, you know, why it's important to have somebody that knows what they're doing come out and take a look at the property. And, you know, an arborist will come for free, which is a great thing, and, you know, has a code of ethics. So it's not somebody trying to, you know, we talk about this all the time too, you know, just a lot of guys are going to come to your property and they're going to get a job out of it no matter what. That's not how this works.
Yeah. I love telling people no. It always takes them aback, and then they realize I'm actually there for the trees because they said, oh no, you don't need to trim. Your tree looks great. I don't want to mess with it. But the reason to have one of us come out is because we have a trained eye, and we're also aware of what else has happened nearby. If there is an insect issue nearby that's the population's growing, it may be something that you might need to know about, but you wouldn't know because it's not someone you know who it's happening to. We've been through a lot. Our office is about a mile from the epicenter of crepe myrtle bark scale. So if you have me out and you have a crepe myrtle, I'm going to see it. I'm going to know about it. I'm going to know how to fix it. It's just we're trained to see what you don't see. I mean, as an arborist, it's almost unsafe driving around because it's hard not to look at trees. I was talking about this with my wife the other day, who she's also in the tree industry. She works for a nonprofit that repopulates urban areas with trees to fight the heat island effect. I asked her, I was like, what is it? It's weird to think of what it's like to not look at the world from the view of trees. We walk our son around the block and I'm looking at everybody's trees. And that's not how most people operate. Most people aren't immediately able to see, oh, that tree has this problem. I wonder if it's showing yet. Or why did that tree die that way? Most people are just, oh, it's a tree. Or they might know an oak from an elm. But having an expert in anything deal with your situation, having an arborist out, is especially a Davy arborist, is going to give you a very informed approach and look at your property and hopefully see something before it becomes a big problem.
Well, I would love to be in the back seat when you and your wife are driving around and looking at volcano mulch and at
rock rings,
guys up on ladders with a chainsaw and a tree that's, you know, half dead. That must be an interesting conversation with you two.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I just the other day, a couple houses in my neighborhood got hit by people just overly structurally pruning and lion's tailing live oaks and then not painting their cuts. And I mean, it's tough. You want to help everybody, but you can't get to everybody.
Yeah. If it's in your neighborhood and you're getting there afterwards and you see this, do you say something or do you not? You want to keep quiet? What do you do?
Honestly, I'm trying to figure out the best approach to that. If it's someone I've talked to before and I know, I'll catch them outside the next time and I'll say, hey, I noticed, you know, you had your trees worked on and there's some things that could have been done differently. And I'd like you to give me the opportunity to at least talk to you about it before you make a decision next time. Whether you use me or not, I'd love the opportunity to give you help you make an informed decision. And I'm new to the neighborhood, so it's kind of interesting trying to get that in there. Like, I don't want to put a sign in my yard that says, hey, I'm your arborist. I'm right here. Here's my number. Come knock on my door. But I also hate seeing structural pruning done that can't be come back from, or it's going to take years to come back from. And cuts not painted just drives me nuts.
You know, I tell this story all the time, but when my son moved into his house, some hack guy in a pickup truck had been working there every year on maple trees, telling these poor people that lived there before him, oh, we need to do this every year. And the trees were just, I mean, it's just topping, you know, they're just topping them over and over again. And yeah. And so I'm sitting there and the trees hadn't leafed out yet and they just moved in, and I start on a rant, you know, which I could see you doing just like mine. And my sister-in-law was, my daughter-in-law was almost in tears because she goes, we just moved in. I said, listen, the tree's going to be okay. But I just, it breaks my heart to see this kind of work done. And then as you know, they lived there over the next couple of years, I'm walking the grandkids around and I'm seeing the guy has been working through the entire neighborhood and destroying these maple trees. And that's why, you know, I've talked a little bit about just being a fly on the wall with you and your wife would be interesting to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real problem. I mean, it's a real problem. There's a lot of people in our industry, like most industries, there's a sliding scale of knowledge and care about doing what's right versus just trying to make money. I think there's also, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I do think I think some of the people that strip water sprouts and lion's tail trees knows that they're going to have to do it again in 3 months if that customer is accustomed to thinking that's correct. So I think there is a little bit of business generation to it as well, where they're trying to make more money, more business for themselves by training people that water sprouts are bad. You need to have clean branches, and I need to come do that immediately every time they pop out. It's unfortunate. It's hard, especially when it's been being done for so long by the same person in one area, and you have to try to untrain an entire population and try to show them what's correct and what's better for your trees, and just to let trees be a lot of the time. I mean, I always tell people, I bet you the most beautiful tree you've ever seen is standing by itself in the middle of a field and that nobody's touched it for 100 years. Beautiful shape, perfect color. And that's because you don't need to mess with them all the time. Really, the urban setting a lot of us live in is what's caused us to have to deal with trees a lot, is that it's stressful for trees in an urban setting. But trees are incredibly capable of dealing with just about anything on their own. And a lot of times all we have to do is help usher those processes to perform correctly. Bringing it back to preventative health in the form of either fertilization or treating with phosphonates to boost resistance or to help seal trunk wounds, making the right decision of which one to do when, whether to do anything on a tree that's recovering from herbicide damage because it needs to flush itself out or it can't be flushed out.
So is there more that we need to talk about when it comes to preventative things for trees?
There's always more that can be talked about. Another big one is mistletoe pruning in the winter. Mistletoe is I don't know how many cedar elms and hackberries y'all have up there, but I know those are the favorite trees for the birds that spread mistletoe here. And it's a yearly thing. When there's no leaves on the trees, look up, and if you see green, you've got mistletoe. And mistletoe needs to be removed early so that it doesn't get into the trunk of the tree, because you can't kill it. You can't. All you can do is remove the branch it's on. And if it gets into the trunk of the tree, that's the tree. You can't remove the trunk. So catching it when it's on the small branches in the outer edge of the tree and removing that seed source for the birds that will then eat the berry, hang out in the tree, and then deposit the berry again, grows another bunch of mistletoe. It's good to get it done when you can see it, because it's really hard to do effectively during the rest of the year. And so keeping the entire plant out of your tree is important, because otherwise it spreads and eventually it'll kill the branches it's on.
So I don't know the plant. Explain to me what it does. It sounds like an invasive vine of some type.
Mistletoe, like from Christmas? So mistletoe is a parasitic plant. If you can imagine how a tree is rooted into the ground, that's how mistletoe is rooted into a tree. Its roots will go, I believe it's up to 12 inches in either direction from the point of the plant and 12 inches deep. And it just sits there stealing. It steals water and it steals sugars and carbohydrates as they pass by when the tree does its normal processes. And eventually it mutates, the roots mutate the tissue in the area, and eventually it steals enough nutrients for that branch to die.
Wow.
And then either fall off or just decline. And so it's transferred by birds. Bird will eat the berry and then go sit somewhere and deposit the berry, if you will. And then it grows there as well. And there's a lot of people have tried to deal with it. I mean, I personally, in my plant healthcare background, have tried to deal with it, but there's not much that can handle it. And if you can't cut it out of the tree, you have to scrape it and it'll grow back most of the time. And so once it's in the trunk of your tree, there's not a lot you can do because you can't cut that section out. So it's definitely one that you want to be on the ball with in the winter when you can see it.
Well, listeners can't see this, but when Aaron was trying to explain to me mistletoe, he was like holding something over his head. Hey, Aaron, how'd you get into this? Why is this job right for you?
I got here a lot later than I should have, that's for sure. I went to college for journalism, actually, and studied journalism and philosophy, and that kind of led me towards not doing it because it's an interesting state of the world right now in journalism and integrity and all of that. But on the side, I mean, I grew up in the country. On the side, I did tree work. I did just with a little mom and pop, one person company, two person company. And then my cousin is a wetland restoration expert in Houston area. And he actually removes invasive species of plants and repopulates with native plants to help the ecosystems of waterways return to correct while they're degrading. And I went to school in San Marcos, Texas, which has a spring-fed river that is federally protected because it has an endangered species of aquatic rice that only grows there. And we were able to get funding from the city to do the same work there. And I was able to, being living there, I was able to be the main contractor there and actually change the environment of these rivers and watch all these elephant ears that are being removed allow the banks to expand 30 feet back out to what they're actually supposed to be because the silt beds have been created, and take out hundreds of invasive trees of ligustrum and chinaberry and all that in areas where the other plants are being shaded out, and build berms to rebuild the banks of the river and help the river them stop collapsing. And so that really got me into a mindset of not just doing tree work, but that there was more to it. And then actually I kind of looked into being at Davie. I met my wife and we got married, and she wanted to move back up to where her family was. And I said, well, if I can find a good job, I'm fine with that. And I got on Indeed and found out there was a company like Davie, and I had no idea there was a tree company that had a conscience and benefits. And I was like, well, that's a career right there. So I applied and I got the job here. And I've been with Davie about 5 years and worked my way up from trimming into plant healthcare and now into sales arborist. And I just really like that I'm allowed to do what's right for the trees. Like you're talking about, not just go out there and try to get a sale. I'm allowed to tell people no. I'm encouraged to educate people on what's right for their trees and what to look for. I love it when I've mentioned something to a customer and they say, okay. And then I get a text message from them a year later and like, oh, is this what you were talking about? I saw some, and hoping it's not because I probably told them about a bad fungus, but I love that they're engaged and they're reaching out and keeping up with me. I have people that I see once a year, people I see every few years, and I have people I see five times a year because they're hyper aware because they've actually gotten themselves into that cosm of knowing and thinking about trees on a broader or a grander level and a more minute level at the same time.
Well, Aaron, I want to thank you for suggesting this topic, and I really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for being on the show, and I got a feeling we'll talk again.
I'd like that for sure. There's definitely a lot more topics I can get more in depth on. Just didn't want to scare anyone the first time.
All right. Thanks so much, Aaron.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Tune in every Thursday to the Talking Trees podcast from the Davie Tree Expert Company. I'm your host, Doug Oster, and do me a big favor, subscribe to the podcast so that you'll never miss a show. And if you've got an idea for an episode, maybe a comment, send us an email at podcasts@davie.com. That's podcasts@davey.com. And as always, we'd like to remind you on the Talking Trees podcast, trees are the answer.